there's already quite a lot of sound coming through this microphone. Is that more than normal? No, it's just normal. Okay. Can you hear that there's like a... Bong, bong. Yeah. It's quite a nice sound. Huh? It's a, yeah, Scops owl. Yeah, it's a kind of an owl out there in the tree. Very, very beautiful. Sorry? No, it's an owl. Yeah. Cosa say here? Say here. And so one of the things that we've been cultivating, one of the ways that we could look at meditation is this gift of listening. Yeah. And one of those ideas that we can have there is like, yeah, is that some annoying alarm going off? Or is it a beautiful little bird singing? Oh, that's very different. It's very different. One of the gifts I gave myself during the lockdown period was rather than, I always love birds, and rather looking for birds, bird watching, to start bird listening. Such a rich way of doing it. So you walk into a woodland, and instead of looking around, you just stretch out your awareness through the whole woodland. Sometimes you can stretch it up for the migrating birds way, way, way above you. Another meditation. So let's take a little bit of time birding, being, opening out, seeing what's there. So I'm not intending to improve upon the silence, so kind of apologies for disturbing it. But there's a few things that might be helpful to be said in the long run, even though we're kind of sacrificing the shared silence. The talk tonight might have its best moments in the title, so I'll tell you the title in advance. It's called 53 Ways to Leave Your Dukkha. And the three kind of matters. Paul Simon fans may notice the 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover reference. And there's also a general point that you may notice at times song lyrics appear in your mind. The poetry of them might have a message for you. Yeah, you might actually find something is invited, awakened. Sometimes it's the next line. Sometimes it's the one that keeps running through your head. But I don't know how many of you remember the opening verses to that Paul Simon song. It's very, very beautiful. And I'll read them. A little bit of rhythm to it. I don't think I'm going to sing right now. The problem is all inside your head, she said to me. The answer's easy, if you take it logically. I'd like to help you in your struggle to be free. There must be 50 ways to leave your dukkha. She said, it's really not my habit to intrude. Furthermore, I hope my meaning won't be lost or misconstrued. But I'll repeat myself, at the risk of being crude, there must be 50 ways to leave your dukkha. There must be 50 ways. We're not going to do the next bit. Or shall we? You got your mic? So we've talked about these, thanks so much. That's why I've been demanding to have the Madonna mic for these years. Bit louder for me? Yeah. Yeah. How's that? Is that good now? Thanks for the reminder. So we talked about these kind of ways of relating to our experience being about the intrapersonal. Yeah, a lot of the teachings here, the practices here, have actually been about how to meet our experience in meditation, on retreat, and that it would be a bit naive, maybe even a bit foolish to think, oh, I can just flip that out and look at the world that way, and that will help resolve the situation in the world. Yeah, so it's going to need to be more dynamic, more supportive in that regard. But that's not to say everything that we're doing here won't transfer across. Yeah, it means maybe it can, maybe it can't. What can, what can't? And I just want to explore a little bit that area. And also how we can support ourselves in keeping this going in new and creative ways. Okay, so this isn't actually what is sometimes called like a closing talk or something like that. It's not even what I like to call that, which is a transitioning talk. You know, as we're transitioning forms, keeping things alive. This is actually a talk about applying meditation to the whole of our life. So that includes now as well. It's the same tools that we're going here. And remembering in that, the depth of that silence that we're supporting together, there's still more to deepen into, still more to settle into, still more and more here to get from this experience. through the time, I just want to remind again, we've talked about no hierarchy between what's being offered here. Right? Each time we've said, well, you could try this way. But just because it's day 4 and not day 3 doesn't mean it's plus one better. Yeah? What matters is it appropriate to what's unfolding now? Is it the right time for me? Does it feel like I have the right capacities? Do I have the right understanding? Do I have the right flexibility of view to bring this one in? And if not, the most skillful, most appropriate thing is not to. Okay. No thing is independently better than any other thing. And no thing is independently better than nothing. Yeah? Sometimes doing nothing might be the best thing for us. So let's talk a bit about how we might kind of bring things into different spaces, into different ways, or different ways of entering this. And because, you know, attention spans are limited, here it is in a one sentence. There's only one insight to be interested in. This one insight is this experience is fabricated. It's not unfabricated. Okay? It's shaped. It's not unshaped, it's conditioned, it's not unconditioned. Knowing that invites other further questions. So how is it being conditioned? And how might it be conditioned differently? Yeah. So all of it's depending on that. Something I've been tempted to say before is this kind of, you know how sometimes if you're playing with ideas, it can be helpful to imagine you're actually doing the opposite of what you're doing, called like a counterfactual, as if it were this way. And something I was imagining, explaining things like the dukkha way of looking, or we could have this anatta way of looking. Yeah. So on the one hand, we're saying that things are unsatisfactory, and then you're like, I don't agree with that. Some things are very nice. I can think of some nice things right now. And another one saying, imagine if this body didn't belong to you, these thoughts didn't belong to you, you could just transfer those things out. You'd be like, well, yeah, nice idea, but it does belong to me. These are my thoughts. No one else is thinking them. And we kind of reason and make these arguments. So the counterfactual is, imagine if what our job was to come to you and you did not believe that things inherently had any satisfaction in them. And you were in this kind of peaceful space, letting things arise, letting them pass, just feeling really lovely and loving and embracing, meeting, intimacy, letting go, all of this. And then I came to you and I said, look, I know things don't last. I know you're not going to believe that things last, but just pretend that they could give you lasting happiness. Would you come on board? You're like, what? I give up this peace and this well-being that I've got now? It's like, yeah, but you know, I know you're just pretending, but go with it. Come on, go with it. Like, as if they could, as if they had it in them in some way. Could you get on board with that? You know, please. I'm trying to sell this idea. You know, my boss isn't going to pay me unless I sell some people onto this thing. Just sign the contract. See things this way. It would feel like a downgrade, right? Yeah. And we say, well, what's in it for me? Not a lot. It's very hard to sell it to you. You're being very difficult, you know? It's like, what? I'm going to turn all these kind of dynamic, shifting, morphing appearances into objects and then obsess about them all of the time. Yeah, that's what you're going to do. Yeah. And then just think about them in kind of greedy, lustful, or kind of aversive and very reactive ways. And, you know, the good thing is the more restless and annoyed you get about something, the longer it seems to last that way. And that kind of gives you more to work with. Yeah. And while you're at it, how about two-for-one deal. You get to believe in an independent self. Completely independent. Oh, yeah. Again, you know, what's in it for us in that? Yeah. It's like, do I have to find it? It's like, no. It's unfindable. Don't worry. It's undiscoverable. You look for it, it won't be there. But when you don't look, it's there. And there you are, being independent. Body changes, mind changes, thoughts flow through, you know, all of that. But somehow, you're that. You're the one who's thinking all of those things that are going through. And just stand kind of proud. I thought that. And you just pretend it, you know, and be really good. And of course, you know, we know. It's not just undiscoverable, it's actually inconceivable in any possible way. Yeah. But we can still pretend. Yeah. Just help a guy out. Believe in it for me. Yeah. And I think, you know, you'd probably say, No, don't think I'm going to do that. I much prefer just to see things just happening. Yeah, just perceptions, just appearances, just fabricated, this way or that way, right? So there's two key questions that are going on through this retreat, and they're onward leading for us if we wish to kind of carry on with them. How is this moment being made this way? How is this being fabricated? Fabric of this perception, the fabric of this awareness. How's it being conditioned? Yes. Same thing, different words. And for me, in this moment, as I feel myself, what do I want to cultivate? What do I sense is possible for me to cultivate? And so this retreat is an invitation to different ways of cultivating. Yeah. And what we mean by that is both different experiences of a cultivated experience. Maybe moments of more love, more connection, more appreciation, more sensitivity, more spaciousness. That. And also the way you do that. What is necessary, what's needed to be able to cultivate that? To bring forth different ways of being, to bring forth different ways of experiencing, to bring forth different ways of feeling, to bring forth different ways of interacting. So, why are we doing it? What are we trying to get from our experience? And one of the really quite important questions for us is, are we practicing for an escape? Is this an escape? Is this a relief? Is this a retreat in that kind of sense? A retreat from the world. Get away from it all. That kind of element. Right? Could be one way of viewing this. Another way could be, this is about learning skills. This is about shaping capabilities. This is about developing beauties. This is about, you know, all that kind of skill quality. So there's kind of the experience side of retreat, and there's also the kind of talent building, skill building. Compassion awakening, fabrication designing part of the retreat. Yeah. And that relief, that escape, is a really important part of this. And I really hope that you've used this in ways that are rejuvenating, are resourcing, have kind of given us a deeper peace, a sense of more well-being, a sense of refreshment. The felt sense of less dukkha is more well-being. And we should respect that. It's like, yes, Tovana, the community here, these teachings and practices down the generations, past, to be received like a gift. A gift that we could also recognize is a birthright for everyone. Everyone should have this opportunity. No one should be denied this opportunity of being able to soothe, calm, ease, brighten, enliven, release their own well-being. Yeah. And in a way, this demonstrates something. Yeah, we are demonstrating our capacity to live well together. Yeah. Very, very minimal fights we've had this week between us, yeah, in this silence. What a way to live. Why is that possible? And where else might that be possible? Is it something we did? Is it something they did? Is it because they're all just so bloody nice that I didn't have to get annoyed with them? Or was there something else we were doing here? Yeah, that actually creates something organized within the chaos of life. And this skill building side, right? Learning. Where does happiness come from? Where does it come from? How do we develop it? What can we understand about existence, about experience, about how we relate, about how we conceive, about how we do this? What is the way to bring this into being? And in a way, we would have to say happiness comes more from within. Something that's not as tied to the circumstances as we initially might think. Something to do with our attitude, something to do with how we pay attention. In some way, happiness is released, opened, uncovered. And we can develop the skill and then bring it with us back into the world of being able to see, we could maybe uncover a happiness there that others don't yet see is there. What is overlooked and easily misunderstood. So, in a way, those two elements are gifts for us. The gift of retreat, which is given to us, and we also are giving it to others by participating in it. And then there's also the gift of the skill building, the skill learning. And that skill will be with us probably for longer than the experiences of the gift of the retreat, the experience. Yeah? That skill will remain for as long as you use it. Skills that aren't used don't get to live, yeah? Spoke before about seeing insights, ways of looking, ways of practicing can become like dried herbs that live on the shelf, never get sprinkled in and get moist again and release their flavors and all of their aromas and all of that through the warmth and the juiciness of being cooked. I sometimes think that I might take my insights, fold them very neatly, put them on my bookshelf where they'll look tidy next to all my other insights. And much better to be that book that's kind of split on the spine because it's always on my bed or my bedside table or on the floor next to me and I'm ready to pick it up and read it and look at it and live it, experience it. But also, and surprisingly, experiences here, we're not completely leaving them behind. When we recall them, when we remember them, when we tell others about them, we have to bring them back to life. And in that moment, when we're recalling it, we're telling someone about it, we're telling ourselves about it, we're bringing it back to mind, what's the difference between that and when it happened? You know, we have to be careful with our memories because we can actually re-traumatize ourselves from bad experiences. But equally, it's the same process that we can re-delight ourselves with beautiful experiences. Just call them back, call it to mind. Bring the attention into it with that same kind of quality. I remember this was really beautiful when I saw that flower and it was glistening after the rain and it touched me and I'm telling someone about it and I can't stop smiling about it and I'm appreciating it all over again. and it's delightful. Like very good recycling of experience. You know, sometimes thinking gets a bad reputation in meditation circles. Don't think, just be here. You know, kind of attitude we get towards it. Whereas if you kind of look through the teachings, it's suggested there are thoughts and thinkings which are really not recommended. Yeah, really kind of greedy, really kind of lustful, really kind of aversive, really kind of angry, really kind of harmful ways of thinking. No, don't do that. But thinking about appreciating, thinking about delight. For example, generosity. The Buddha says, when you have a thought of generosity, oh, that's a good thought. What you're going to give to someone else, what you want to share with someone else. And what we're doing in metta is thoughts of generosity, aren't they? Yeah. But you shouldn't be thinking. But anyway, while you are, just give away what's really beautiful, what you can think of, what you can recall, what you can remember. And it's delightful just to practice giving that thing. So the Buddha says, yeah, think about that. And really stay in touch if you do an act of generosity. Feel it. Feel what it moves through you. Feel the liberation of being kind to another, being generous with what you have, all of that. And then the real killer for the anti-thought police is reflect back on it. Think about it again. Even when it's not happening, just think about it. Oh, that was cool. That was sweet. That was nice. Do you remember how they smiled? Oh, remember how I smiled? Very nice. And so we can do the same thing with retreat experiences. And some people say, don't get attached. It was just a pleasant experience. That's all it ever was. Yeah, okay. Like, I'm not attached. I'm just thinking about it, man. Just enjoying it. I'm just letting it soften me up. Letting it support me, I'm letting it re-nourish me. Yeah. So check in with our relationship to these things, yeah. And really another interlinked or kind of integral part, really, or just let's just say important, those words are a bit complicated, is also how we look at ourselves having journeyed here. What have we been doing? How do we talk about that? How do we express that to ourselves? What were you these days? Were you an experimenter? Trying this, trying that, trying stuff out. Were you like a chef? Sprinkle a bit of this, bring out the flavors in that, let it simmer a while, put it in the oven and let it bake. Were you like an artist, perhaps? Yeah, dropping a little bit of color here, or more like a sculptor who's kind of shaping their body and their experience, their awareness, stretching that out over here. Or, you know, an explorer that's going into new territories. Or what else? Yeah. The Buddha, and it's kind of difficult for some of us to get on board with that feeling, was like a warrior, using that kind of warrior language. Nowadays, we might have a scientist gathering data on, you know, the inputs, outputs of their felt experience. All of these different visions and views. One who's, you know, making sense of life. Another one might be the other side of allowing life not to make any sense at all. It's that capacity that we can view what we're doing in different ways. What are you doing? It's helpful to know. What most deeply serves you? which implies a question of what do you also most deeply desire to see? The question we started with. What is it you wish to see more of? And do you have the courage to help that come about? Because there's maybe 50 ways. And I said 53 because the three that I'm thinking of, in addition to Paul Simon's contributions, are unskillful thinking, unskillful conceiving. Yeah. Second one is our unwholesome relating that arises in conjunction with that. And our kind of limited feeling in the bodily life, in the energetics. So we look at this as kind of ways of looking, ways of conceiving, ways of perceiving. We look at it as ways of relating, or we might call it, you know, like metta, ways of loving, ways of appreciating, ways of caring, ways of holding the space relationally. And the ways of regulating our energetics. 53 ways to leave your dukkha. And all of that can be aligned, if you wish, to what feels to be your deepest meaningfulness. So I think something that has only came up in a kind of a group exchange, as far as I recall. So maybe I'll mention it, and maybe you can just let me know. Did we already talk about this? That sometimes, when you read through the teachings, the good old Pali teachings, you'll get somebody who's receiving a teaching. It might be quite simple, right? It might be really very profound. But you get this sense in the teachings that, yeah, this person gets it. You get that sense, not just because you get that sense, it actually says they get it. But then you really get a sense that they get it, because they are just leaping about with excitement. They say, that is so good, that is marvelous, it's amazing. You know, however these words are getting translated. Yeah. Master Gotama, you have turned upright what was upside down. You've made available what was not accessible. And I see it. I get it. And they're like just punching the air. And I read that and I thought, I never punched the air. But I feel like I get it. I really think I get it. Do I not get it? And you realize it's like, oh, is it because I cooked from a recipe book? I didn't invent it. You know, it's like, oh yeah, you chop the onions and you chop the tomatoes and you stir it around and it comes out and it's like, yeah, it's good. As one would expect. I paid a lot for this recipe book. It was the best one. Everyone said it was the one to get, and here my cooking is good. On to the next problem. Yeah, kind of on to the next problem type of attitude. We just turned upright what was upside down. We just made available what was inaccessible. Okay, what's next? Curious, isn't it? Kind of curious. So these things, it's good to recognize as skills, it's good to recognize as returnable experiences, but it's really, really good to know that when we have done something, we need to encourage a sense that someone has just come up to us and done a magic trick. Whoa. I had stress, I released, and I had less. I'm releasing and I'm having less. That's about as much as I can release. But maybe I could keep learning how to release more. You know, there's nice kind of thing about this kind of really big, elaborate magic tricks that you see, and you're like, I don't know how they did it, but that's really good, you know. And then there's this thing called close-up magic, where someone really just comes up to you and they just do stuff, and it's like, no. That shouldn't be possible. And yet, not only that, not only is the magic being done to us, we're doing the magic to ourselves, and not only that, we are the trick itself. Amazing. Really amazing. Perception is not anything like what I thought it was. I thought this was like television. You just look at it and it shows you, oh yeah, no, I saw this one before. It's that Friends repeat from 1995. This is the one where Ross does the thing. And each time it plays, it's the same, and everyone sees the same show, and you can check in with other people. And then you see reality, perception, is not like that at all. On my show, this and this happened. Yeah? And the next time I look at it, it's different. And the Buddha gives an analogy for this that is called putting salt in a cup. Putting salt in a river. It's not the same experience. The way these things land in us is different. When we're in a small, tight vessel, the cup gets so salty you can't drink it. And when you drop it in the lake or the vast river, you can't even tell if it got salty or not. That's magic. Because the size of the container isn't something that life gives you. What a shame. I'm a small container. Exactly what size are you? How is this moment being fabricated? How could this moment be fabricated? Or in other words, what's really possible for you, and not in some point in the future, now. Who do you want to be? How do you want to journey? I know it's a little late to bring it up, but this word meditation, you keep using this word meditation. I do not think it means what you think it means. Do we agree what it means? I'm going to make a suggestion what it means to me, and you can disagree. Keep finding my voice going into the 50 ways of dukkha intonation. I'm resisting. So, for me, a meditation, basically it's a cultivation of something. It's bringing something into being that was not there before. That's what meditation means. And to do that, I want to be clear in my intention. Clear in my intention. What is it I want to see more of? And what's the next step on that journey towards that? I want to see more kindness. I'm going to do some metta. So I get an intention. Three parts to this practice. And I'm going to say, okay, that's my intention. Now I'm going to do the middle part of the practice. I'm going to pay attention in that intentional way. I'm going to pay attention with kindness, practicing my metta. This is the middle part of a meditation. to be a full meditation, by this definition, it also then needs a point of reflection. What happened? What happened? Oh, I got really annoyed. Oh, there was more kindness. Oh, I just sat there waiting for the bell to ring. Right, reflect. Okay. We're learning now. Set an intention. Find a way of bringing that intention into being. And then reflect. How did that go? Three parts to a practice. Why I like that is because then you could do that anywhere. It's not posture dependent. Right? You just set an intention. Could be sitting, standing, lying, walking, running around, dancing. Set an intention. Pay attention to your experience with that intention alive, and then you reflect. What happened? Oh, that made dancing so much more fun. Yeah. I was connected to whatever. Yeah. Brought that through. You can do it when you're washing up. You can do it when you're driving your car. You can do it when you're in a conversation. Set an intention. Pay attention. Particular way, and then you reflect. Learn. Did I do it? If you did it, what happened? If you didn't do it, what happened? So we joked before about the Buddha being someone who gives relationship advice, ways of relating to our experience. And that's what this description of meditation says to me. Yeah. Clear intention, pay attention, and reflection. Cultivating a different way of relating to my experience. What am I allowing to manifest? What does my practice encourage to manifest? And that important question from the reflection, is this what I want to get good at? Yeah. Because sometimes we set an intention, or better yet, let's talk about a moment where we didn't set an intention. Maybe we come in, bleary-eyed, bell ringer kindly woke us up, 6:45, come in, sit here, let's get through this one. And then it's breakfast, or, well, it's yoga, and then it's breakfast. You know, it's like this kind of way. Is this what I want to get good at? Kind of getting myself into that half-doze, kind of just wait for the bell to come. This is the skill to build. Hang in there until the bell rings. Yeah. That's a direct invite to Hades, yeah, the king of the underworld. Yeah, I'm just getting through. And it's okay, we'll have times like that, but if that's all we do in our meditation, if that's all we want to get good at, you know, one of my guitar teachers used to say, you want to listen to yourself when you're practicing and just check that you're not practicing mistakes, because what you practice is what you get good at. To which I replied, I like making mistakes and that's what I want to get good at. No, but that kind of sense is, okay, am I practicing what I want to get good at? So ask yourself, what do you need to meet your life? What do these times require of us? Yeah. The confidence, the courage. Someone very kindly wrote me a note asking me if I could give any relationship advice. Try and be lucky. Aim high. But furthermore, I think when I was suggesting that the Buddha offered relationship advice, I wouldn't go to him for relationship advice. Yeah. Unless you think, contemplate your future partner as full of pus and bile and things like this. You know, it's kinda, I think he was just worried about lust rather than establishing a good, firm, loving relationship. But also we can take these practices in that interpersonal way and just see, can I also practice falling in love with myself. So I'm less in need of demanding that others love me. To practice self-love. And as we're doing today, also practicing not self-love. Yeah? See, oh, it goes deeper that way sometimes. Nourishes more that way. And then we can drop the patterns that build up that sense is I'm not deserving of this. And shape ones that do. Do serve us, do serve others. The fullness of our beauty. And yeah, definitely it's possible to say at times that no being contains satisfaction. But of course that doesn't mean we can't love them and they can't love us. Even passionately. Pus and vile and all. And I think the last thing I want to say is these are beautiful practices for peace, love and understanding in the way. On the way, through the way. But also, does our practice only calm us? Does it only soften us? Does it only open us in the kind of peaceful ways? Or does it actually brighten us, empower us, challenge us? And really bring out that inner strength as well. Because they're both fabricated experiences. And if the world needs us, calls for us, wants us to not just awaken in some isolated, peaceful space, but actually really to take life and take ourselves into life, then maybe that's what our practice is calling for. And can it go there? Can it shape there? Can it support us there? When I was saying that here, this retreat is actually demonstrating something that is possible for us to live in harmony, to live outside of conflict, to live in ways that we trust, we sense is beautiful, then this here is a demonstration. This is a demonstration. We are in a demonstration. Did you bring your placard? We're in a demonstration. Why are you not chanting? We're demonstrating something. When we go to demonstrate at a demonstration, we should be protesting. Protesting. Not detesting. Protesting and demonstrating what is possible. To protest is to call the witness. Bring forth, show the world what is possible. And this is something our practice can do. Our practice can nourish us, deepen us, recharge us, shape us, rebirth us into a new form that we can come into the world. And it's also a skill building, a capacity to enter, to entertain, to touch what feels impossible to come close to. It's all fabricated. And who we think we are is also fabricated. What we think is possible is also fabricated. Some years ago, we were inspired to create a group called Sangha Seva. And it was born in a leprosy community in India. A really inspiring place, a place that was set up as a haven for those who were outcast from the world. People were so afraid of people with leprosy that they wanted to lock them up and keep them away. Even after it was completely curable. Yeah, getting leprosy would be considered better than getting diabetes or hypertension or all these other things, yeah. Because you can get completely cured from leprosy. It doesn't affect you cognitively or physically. When it's well treated. But there was such a fear that this is some curse of gods, you know. People were living isolated from this. And and one man and his family, Baba Amte, Thai Amte, the Amte family, they created this community for people to live in love, in service, in connection, in positivity, demonstrating what is possible. We went there, we read about it in our book. The chapter was called Designs for a Future. Ways of living, a future that we dream is possible, where people actually live from love and connection and community and inspire each other. And what they would speak about there is wasted resources of the human life. Yeah, so many contributions that can happen. And now we have retreats. We're going to have a retreat in Calais, working with refugees, another wasted resource. Now we don't want your healthy, skillful beauty coming into our country, destroying our unhappiness, you know, with all your productivity and new ideas, kindnesses. We want to try and put you on some prison boat where you can't do anything useful. Why? What a wasted opportunity. And here we have the muezzin beginning to call. We have our neighbours, the Palestinian neighbours, just across the way. And so few here maybe have had the opportunity to be there outside of a uniform. Yeah. Because of a sense of fear, a sense of separation, a sense of threat that's there. And so we also have a retreat here that opens out that possibility to see, would my meditation practice support me to make a connection where there's separation? Would it support me to bring peace where peace is most needed? Does my practice have the capacity to demonstrate what I sense is possible? Because it can. We can have periods of times where we relieve, we recharge, we release, we step back from the world. But we can't live here. We also have to re-engage. We also have to step forward. We also have to create possibilities. We can get weighed down by responsibility for the shame, the embarrassment, the difficulty, the pain of what we as a nation are doing to another nation. And the question isn't about responsible for. Who did it? I didn't sign the Balfour Declaration. You didn't make any orders for this or for that. The real question is, who's going to take a responsibility to this situation? Who's going to come forward, step forward, make their life meaningful, offer themselves? We can be peace, a being of peace. We can be friends, a being of friendship. We can listen with peace. We can transform. Believe in the flexibility and the malleability and the reshaping capacities of a meditator. If we believe in that, then why do we think it's limited here and there? Until you believe it's limitless, until you believe it's limitless, there's further to go. Don't underestimate what's possible. Let's have a quiet moment together to close. recognizing what kind of a meditator are you? The artist, the explorer. You're also a world creator, getting the world ready for its first ever democracy, its first ever taste of real peace.